Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. What's up, Ray?
I can't see the jacket, but I thought you said, I'm just assuming what your clothes are like, so I thought you were going to say you felt like DiCaprio right when he slid off the door into the water.
Just sinking to the bottom of the ocean.
What movie is it?
What
remember
was
Wolf
the girl's
of-
name?
Kate?
Rose.
Kate
Rose,
yeah, Rose
just said, smell you later, Jacko.
Well, why didn't she hop off if she was so
emotional?
Why couldn't you
it.
Share the door?
Move your ass over. Give me a spot in the wood. It's not like he's a tub of garbage. Move over.
Right.
You're right.
That never made any sense. Why didn't Rose? Why isn't there any pressure on Rose to move?
Yeah, Rose. You can't move over.
Or how about shift work here?
Exactly.
You take a shift. I'll take a shift.
Put one arm on the thing.
He's
both
like,
of us stay alive.
You're done. Take a lap.
You're a hell of a guy, Jack. Beat it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Thanks for coming out, Jack. See you later.
I'll always remember you. Take care.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you're a pigeon that paints pictures on a boat. I'm going for some cash. That's what Rose said.
Yeah. Rose kept that little jewel, and she had herself quite the life. An old Jackie boy was at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, and he was swimming with the fish.
Anyway, what do you make of the Steve Yzerman situation, catching everybody off guard that out of nowhere he's the new GM of the Detroit Red Wings?
Well, it tells you lots of things happen that we don't know about, right? It all seemed like it was, you know, once he stepped down in Tampa and was going back, going back to Detroit because that's home and that's where his family is. And for whatever reasons could be, it seemed pretty clear that the next step was that Ken Holland was going to, you know, move to a presidency role of some sort or whatever they were going to call it.
Steve, you think he wanted that though, Ray?
I think Ken still wants to be a GM.
So that's kind of him getting jammed up there, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and or, being there a long time. And I don't think he's moving to the, vice presidency. I think that's his title, right? I don't think he's moving there for $32,000 a year.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know, so I think there's, you know, there was going to be a time that just, it's so rare that I... Like a player and a person that's a legend in a city around a hockey team or a baseball team or whatever is sitting there as a general manager somewhere else. There had to be a time that this was going to happen, that it was going to be as close to the right thing as there could be. And I would say it could have been a lot more bumpy, but. For those of us that know Ken, he's a pretty incredible guy, and this was as smooth a road, I think, as they could have paved.
You know what, Ray? That's a good point, because it would be a shame if the Red Wings left this, and then all of a sudden he said, you know what, I am going to go to the New York Rangers, and then Kenny Holland goes to Seattle, and they're like, we had the chance to get Stevie Yzerman.
Yeah.
So they might have jammed up Kenny Holland a bit, but at the end of the day, they got their guy for the next...
Well, don't you think this has been in the works for a long time? Like, does anyone actually believe that they called them up in March and said, what do you think?
Yeah, the fact that
I don't.
No, but the fact that he stepped down, like, right in September. Was it September that...
Yeah, it was like a day before the season
camp started.
Like, that almost... It was almost like he looked up the CBA rules as to how, you know, how would I go about this approach if my end game was going to be taking over Detroit without... collusion, without everything. Like, it sounds like he tried to really follow the letter of the law, if it's an unwritten law or not. But we all knew he was kind of linked to there. And Ray, you know Kenny Holland. How old is he now? Is he 61,
I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's got some good years left in him. But, you know, it's...
Well, it's a tough gig. Detroit's not in a great spot.
No, but he's been doing it for...
I don't think they're in a bad spot. I thought the last half of last season, I thought they started to come around. Dylan Larkin took a step. Athanasiou took a step. I think they could be in good shape next year.
Well, I do know that, you know, like, the criticisms of Ken are on the contracts that are sitting there. You know, the Advocator deal, the Helm deal. Those are not... great deals, right?
No.
And since that time when they totally bottomed out at, you know, they made the playoffs for 25 years in a row, and then everything's gonna, you know, eventually, you know, it's not like they couldn't see that the end was coming, but they try to stretch it out. Eventually you get kicked in the teeth, and now you got to rebuild. So they had, like, I think counting this year, they have like 32 picks or 31 picks in three successive drafts. So if the scouts do a good job, Iserman's going to reap the benefits of what they've tried to do the last couple of years. And we've seen from Tampa that Steve is really a pretty shrewd guy. Like, he did an amazing job there. And now the next steps are, who comes with him, or who does he hire, or what's going to be there? Like, will they just continue on the plan that started here with his, you know, with his idea and his eye to it? Like, it, all that's going to be, you know, pretty quickly apparent. But they've got a lot of picks, so they got a lot of kids. And if a third of those kids hit, you know, 10 out of 32 picks hit, well, then you're in pretty good shape, because they do have Mantha, FNCU, Larkin, Bertuzzi. That's probably two-thirds of your top six. Now, you still got to find the other ones. It would be nice to have a stud player, and they're going to have all kinds of cap room in another year or two, and I think Iserman will do a great job. I just thought I'm glad it worked out the way it did, put it that way.
Yeah, does Zadina kid have a chance to be a star?
He better.
Star?
He's a top five pick.
I'm saying, but does he have a chance to maybe be one of those guys?
That's what the hope is. He had a pretty decent year in the American League. Because he's a European, even though he played in North America, he could go to the American League as an 18-year-old.
Right.
So the Euros get that, you know, like, the Canadian kids can't do that. The U.S. kids can't do that, but the Euros can. And so, you know, he had a predictably slow start, but after the World Juniors, he went back and ended up earning a call-up for a while. He got hot, and I think he's a scorer. I like him a lot, although, you know, he's 18. Well, he's just 19 years old now.
Leafs Bruins tonight, in terms of the bench, now that we're down to a best two out of three, would you expect Babcock and Cassidy to shorten up the bench tonight, or will you expect a four-line game and, you know, all three D-pairings getting a lot of ice tonight, or a fair amount of ice?
See, I think Boston wants a longer bench than Toronto does. Despite, you know, I think Moore's had a terrific series, and, you know, they can be happy if they want with Ennis and Gauthier and Moore as their fourth line. But it seems like part of Boston's identity is to roll those guys all the way through. Corrali coming back is, you know, maybe not a big deal in the news department, but he makes that line a lot better. He's physical. He can forecheck. You know, who knows what kind of health he's at, but he's, you know, he's going to play. And I would say Boston wants the longer game than Toronto would.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it'll come down to the context of the game and the way everything plays out. But
they don't have the match game either. That's something that, you know, the luxury Cassidy has in this game. So it'll be interesting to see if he's going to try and get that top line again away from Tavares and go head-to-head against Matthews.
Or Nylander,
yeah.
Well, you would think there's going to be some shifts where Nylander starting in the defensive zone for whatever reason, and, you know, Bergeron's line's going to be out right away, unless they just came off the ice. Like, at home, you've got the luxury of trying to jump a matchup somewhere.
Yeah.
Well,
it's amazing, though. Like, four games, I'm looking at all the stats and the numbers, and, you know, Leafs are better here and better here than the year before and all this stuff, and you're still in the same, you know, it's like it hasn't even started yet.
No, it's been weird. You're right. It kind of does feel like there's been four tune-up games,
wow,
and now the real series begins tonight.
Yeah,
when you look at, you know, where they were last year and even in 2013, they were down 3-1 going into this game.
Mm.
And yeah, Now it's tied 2-2, and, you know, hopefully that doesn't affect the intensity of the group, either group. You wouldn't expect that it would. But as we talked about yesterday, right, game four didn't have a real playoff vibe to it. It didn't feel that ugly, that mean, that nasty, that desperate.
You know what's weird about that, Brian, is, okay, so we all watched the game, and we, you know, I wasn't there. I'm just watching on TV, and, you know, that's the sense that people had as they watch it. In the two series I'm doing, it seems like every minute the Colorado Calgary series and the Winnipeg-St. Louis series get a little nastier, like minute by minute. I'm really entertained and impressed with how hard these series are. And it just seems at times, like game four, as you mentioned, just didn't seem to have it. And I don't know why. I don't really have an explanation, but man, there's some nastiness in these two series.
Well, the nastiness was there in game two, and then it just completely evaporated.
Well, I don't
think
the
refs went in the locker rooms and said,
enough.
But the Leafs didn't want to play that.
No, the Leafs didn't want to play that.
And they got away from that, and they won game three. So,
well, it benefits the Leafs if it's a quieter,
exactly. That's
a skill-based game.
I don't think they're the way they're constructed that way to get nasty. And they want to outskill the team. That's the way the team is constructed.
But if one of those games goes that way, don't lose it. You know what I mean?
Right. Like if it happens, you got to find a way to win that game.
You do. You're right.
You know. And wouldn't you say, Ray, Calgary, maybe they should try to quiet that down? Like, do something different.
They've lost their mind a little bit here, yeah. I think. You know, like they've become rattled. When I say intimidated, I don't mean physically intimidated, but they seem intimidated by McKinnon's speed. Like every time he gets the puck, their defense, they back up so fast and so far. And I'm understanding it. It's not probably a great sight that he's in full flight and you got to stop him. But it's like they've become rattled instead of just get the puck, hold on to the puck. That, look at their defense. Look at Colorado's defense. It's not six world beaters. Like, just hold it down there. Let them make a mistake eventually. But they've had no patience. They've taken too many penalties. They've had, you know, they've had chances to win and haven't. And you can just see that they're flustered that they're in this spot. You know, they could have won game two. Frolik got stopped on the doorstep, and 10 seconds later, it's in the net. Game four, Backlund had that chance, and a few minutes later, it's in the net, and they lose that one too. And it's like they had their chances, but it doesn't even matter anymore. It's like, okay, great, it's 3-1. I don't care if you had 100 chances. What do you do tonight? They pulled James Neal out tonight.
What do you make of that? James Neal out of the lineup.
He's had zero impact on the games. It's like there's the saying, different courses for different horses. This course isn't right for him. Like, this is too fast right now. And so they're going to put in Austin Zarnik, who's a quick little guy, and it's another way the playoffs are changing, right? You would have never seen a big guy come out for a little guy 10 years ago.
Right.
But they need energy.
Yep, they got to keep up. And, man, there's zero room tonight. I think Calgary will play well tonight.
What was your reaction last night in Winnipeg, that 2-2 goal after the review and the net came off the moorings? And I thought they made the right call, and based on the rule book, they did as well. But just the essence of that rule, I think, was applicable last night. But what was the mood like in the building when that went down?
It was really interesting to watch, because, of course, the fans immediately, as soon as the ref points to center ice, and do those mics on the ref, by the way, do they ever work when they're supposed to work?
No.
Because the ref said, because the defensive player pushed the offensive player into the net and the puck went through the post, that's a good goal. But you could barely hear it. So instantly, the people are booing, and, you know, because they don't understand the rule because they couldn't hear it.
Right.
But on the St. Louis or the Winnipeg bench, you know they got the call right because Maurice didn't lose his mind.
Right.
Like, it was like, oh, man, they just scored. But so I wouldn't say they panicked, or they had a really great chance to give them the lead, which probably would have been the win, and Binnington made a blocker save. They were the better team for two periods. I ran into one of the senior Jets guys up in the press box after two, and I was saying, man, I really like the way you guys are playing. He's like, yeah, I think we need one more. And I'm like, yeah, but you really locked them down. And he said, yeah, I think we need one more.
Yeah, he was right.
And he was right. They needed one more. And there was a cool little sidebar to the game-winning goal. I guess Braden Schenn had a skate problem, and he was supposed to be on the ice, but he couldn't go because they were fixing his skate. And so Bozak went in his place. And when the puck came around the boards, Bozak's right-handed. Just think if that was Shen.
Yeah.
What was he going to do with it? He was going to jam it back in the corner, and Bozak fires a grenade over to the slot. What are the chances that Schwartz not only gets a stick on it, but he hits it hard enough to go through the goalie?
Unbelievable play.
3 feet off the ice. Bozy meant to do that.
Biggest fluke. One of the bigger fluke plays in playoff history.
Well, Ray, we were talking about Trouba eating it with 27 seconds left. It's like, that's a little too much time.
It's funny, like, whatever must have gone through his head there, right? Like, at that, you know, he made a read, and I'm sure he looks at it and goes, why didn't I just pound it around the board?
That's what I was thinking.
You know, like, anywhere, at least if you lose it, when you pound it around the boards, it's out at the point as opposed to right behind the net. But he made a bad read, man. And then they get burned by the play that we just talked about. When I saw it live, I thought, I'm like, what a pass, man. He dropped that read on his tape, and then you see it on the replay, and you're like, oh, yeah, he dropped it on his kneecap, and he smacked it in. But it was a tough, tough loss, man. Can you imagine, like, you win two games in the other team's building, and now you got to go win there again.
Yeah.
St. Louis just did it. Can Winnipeg do it again tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow night?
Well, and these blown leads in the third period at home, right? Like, they did it. Was it game one, I believe?
No.
Or?
Let's see. What game did they do that? Yeah.
Same thing. Bozak scored late, right?
Yeah. That was a one-goal game, though. That wasn't like two. They didn't make up two.
Right, but they saw the lead 1-0 going into the third.
Yeah.
They blew it. And then game five, the same thing.
Nobody has lost more leads leading after two periods this year than Winnipeg. That's 11 times they've led after two, and they've lost this year.
Yeah, that last night looked so deflating. And, I mean, I know they're saying all the right things, but that's where I want to see... And I know it's such a cliche, but that's where their leadership group has to grab that game six, and do it, because it's not going to be the guys farther down in the lineup. Although I thought their depth players played quite well last night, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be Scheifele and Wheeler. They were on the ice, unfortunately. I know it was Trouba, but they were on the ice, and they've got to find a way to be difference makers, or they're gone.
Well, look at the way the games that they won in St. Louis, right? They win game 3, 6-3, and, you know, that was a party for everybody, right? But Kyle Connor got two goals that game. Game 4, Connor got a goal. Scheifele got a goal. Wheeler had a couple assists. Like, the games they've won, that top line's been the boss. And last night they scored two goals, one by Tanev and one by Kevin Hayes, their third and fourth line, Lowry and Hayes, their third and fourth line centers. And,
yeah.
You know, and nothing from the top of the lineup.
Have any of you guys ever actually seen Craig Berube smile?
I have, but...
You've seen him smile before.
Well, he's
golf with the guy. It's not all...
He's quite funny.
Did you see him post-game last night? Like, that's the biggest win of his coaching career. Yeah. And I thought he was going to jump into the crowd, start suckering journalists.
You know him. I've never met him.
I don't know him.
I thought the Winnipeg fans were quite creative. Did you see the sign, the Bird Box? Is that Netflix movie we've seen?
Sandra Bullock. Yeah.
Sandra Bullock on Bennington's head,
right.
In net, and then there was a beach ball going over his right shoulder. There were some signs and some things going on. I thought it was quite funny, but
Berube did a great job. Like, yeah, he flipped the lines with a couple of top players.
In-game adjustments, right?
Yeah, no, he's done a good job.
When they move Shen from the top line to the middle. First they flipped him with David Perron. He went from the first to the second line, and I got to say, that's the best game I've ever seen David Perron play.
Like, one of them, anyway.
Oh my God, he was physical. He ran into Buff a couple times, and I'm like, man, you were running into a condominium there. And like, he held his own. Like, he got an assist. He played great. But when they eventually moved Shen in the middle, it's like he just got freed up. He skated way better. He was, you know, he scored the goal and on the play with Sundqvist when he got hurt. And that might be something to watch for the next game, too, as I know he's not a big name, but he's had a hell of a series, is that Oscar Sundqvist. And if he's out, they're down a player, you know. So we'll see how it goes. But it is, that's for tomorrow. Tonight, it's whether Calgary gets in, you know, whether they can keep this thing going.
Enjoy it tonight. We'll do it again on Monday.
Have a good Easter weekend, everybody.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline.